When you become a manager, it's not about you anymore. It's about your team. It's about the others, right? You completely need to switch your mind on that direction, and really understand if you are gonna be able to help others grow, and probably spend more time on them than on you. So that's very important. You need to be sure that you will do that.
Hello friends, I'm Kirill and this is my podcast about UX career, where I interview design leaders and other tech professionals to help you become better designers, team members and human beings. In this episode, I'm talking to Fernando, who is a UX design manager at Volvo Cars in Sweden. And today we talk about his career journey and how he transitioned from designer to manager. We talk about touch UI in cars, autonomous driving, and the joy of driving experience, what it means to be a manager, job search advice during tough market times, and tips on presenting to leadership, and a lot more. Hope you enjoy this episode. Welcome, Fernando. Welcome. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's Friday, and I'm happy to be here with you today.
Yeah, I keep hearing this like Friday, like everybody's looking forward to Friday. I wonder if it's a sign that maybe we're all too overworked and maybe it's looking forward to this short break. But frankly, I am jealous of some companies who have like four days work week.
Lucky
because
guys.
Every time it's like a two day weekend. I feel like it's almost like only one day, and on Sunday already thinking about what's going to happen on Monday and like the upcoming week. So like 3 days weekends are my favorite, frankly.
I agree with you.
Awesome. Okay, so thanks for coming and thanks for really being open to share your story and your advice and your lessons learned and some of the insights from your career, from your growth from a designer to a manager. And also switching to a completely, I would say, completely different field in the design area, in the design world. So I'm really looking forward to asking you a bunch of questions today. So thank you for being open to that.
Yeah.
Let's start with the beginning. Like, why did you really get into design? And how did it happen? And what do you do today?
And into design by accident. I was supposed to be working with my dad. I did business administration. And I was going to move in that direction. But because of a teacher that I had, I feel a bit about marketing, creativity, those things. And I just switched to graphic design. And then one thing took me to the other. And here I am. It's just design just catch me. And you were also asking about today, my day today. Well, 8:30 presentation to talk about an escalation. So we sometimes escalate things when there is not agreement between the stakeholders. A lot of meetings, most of them just to get agreements or to support like people in the team that are dealing with tough situations. Also start like preparing next sprint. So we have like some discussions about how are we doing with the sprint, which tasks are done, what need more attention, what is blocked, a bit of that. But yeah.
So you're describing your basically kind of day-to-day responsibilities of being a UX manager at Volvo Cars, right?
Sometimes I have work. I have time to work. Sometimes I in fact tend to book time in my calendar to work. So, but Friday is normally like a day that I try to use to close things. I also try to block my morning to do those things, close on things, and prepare like the next week. But yeah, I can say that, yeah, more or less, it's just getting some key meetings. Supporting the team and preparing a bit of work for the next week.
Sounds good. So, and before Volvo Cars, you were working at Amazon, if I'm not mistaken. Right?
Mm-hmm. Amazon Alexa.
What made me choose going into the car industry after, I guess, previous experience?
So, two things. One is my love for cars. Even don't say anybody, but I don't like electric cars. I am kind of an I like the old style cars. I like diesel cars. I like, but don't tell anybody.
Manual stick shift.
Yes.
not surprising.
So those are like the cars that I like. However, in the car industry, there are like a lot of challenges. So something that I've been trying to do is always move one step ahead of what is happening right now. I think that that's what keeps me excited. So I think that there is a big change that will happen in the auto industry. And now we are at the very beginning. So it's the time to be here. If you are a UX designer, basically. Everything is still in very early stages. There are a lot of opportunities to influence, to make changes, and to add value. And that's what made me pursue a position in the car industry till this one show up, and I just took it. But basically, that's how I ended here. Love for cars and looking for the next opportunity.
So, and the what you mentioned about like the upcoming changes to the car industry and maybe like driving experience. And I'm sure you're being like inside in one of the leading companies developing these new technologies. Is there anything, maybe anything that's not public, but you can still share, like from at least what kind of changes are we talking about? Is it like flying cars
or no, something else? So, I mean, probably all of you are already aware, but now that we are moving to a more tech focus kind of way of thinking around car. It's not about the engine, right? It's not about it's not about the engine anymore. It's about something else. So I think that how we do things in the car through a screen, through an interface, through an HMI is getting more important and relevant. We are moving from like physical controls to something that is more digital. I think that sometimes it will make sense, sometimes it doesn't make sense at all, but basically we are moving more into these big screens where you can do a lot of things while driving, right? Or getting information while driving. I think that will be the biggest way to be different from other brands. And that's why I think that this is important. The interior, I think that all of the cars can provide the same interior or something very similar. The look and feel of the car and everything is more and more difficult to be different if we talk about those things that have been happening for so long. But this that is completely new is when there are, like, again, more opportunities to be different from the other ones. And then there are like different things that can happen. If you reuse things from Google or from iOS, you will have some limitations. So probably you will be able to move faster, but will be able to do less customization. If companies develop things in-house, they will have bigger opportunities to build brand new things and be more different than others. So I think that that's kind of where everything is happening around those two things.
Okay, a few questions. First, so there is a never-ending debate, because like in the last few years, I think it's not a surprise, but it's not news that more and more car companies go towards like a bigger size of the touch screens in the cars, like, and replacing buttons with the touch UI, right? And there is a never-ending debate and, I guess, pros and cons lists of why companies get rid of the buttons. Because, like, my personal opinion, I actually enjoy having tactile buttons. I enjoy the physical mechanical button, or I mean, it could be electric button, but at least there is like a physical surface and not like a touch screen, because you can use it without looking at this. It's easier to learn that it's there compared like to gazillion of different button options that can be at any place on the screen, right? And it's just, I think it's safer, frankly. I think it's safer. So I wonder how, especially Volvo cars that have been at least focusing, and like one of their unique value propositions was like top focus on the safety, right? So how does this really merge the using touch screens and basically looking away from the road, because you have to look at the touch screen to hit the right button or like look at the information, and like basically you're distracting the driver from driving, and how does it really connect with the values of Volvo cars?
I mean, we are covering that part right now. We safety is the thing that we care the most. So in our okay, I will keep my words here because this is something that is not happening right now. But basically, in all the cars, you have something in front of you, right? You have the dashboard. So I think that, for example, Tesla is deciding to have all the information, the big screen in the middle. I think that that's distracting. And as you were saying, that's like keeping your attention outside of the road. That is the most important thing. I think there is some study that tells you that you will end spending around 10 seconds per minute in that screen when driving. I am just taking this information from the top of my head, so don't take it too seriously, but something around that. So that's why I think that having the information in front of you, or at least the key information that you need, right, is the way to move if you want to increase the level of safety while driving. Right. Not everything makes sense to be in front of you, right? The radio doesn't make sense to be in front of you. But I think that it's a matter of finding the right balance between what you have in front, what is in your side, or being more contextual, just provide you what you need when you need it. So there are like many different combinations of things that you can do in order to meet the safety bar that we have that is pretty, pretty high. On top of that, and this is something that I didn't know before joining a car company, and probably most of the people don't know about it, but we need to go through a lot of safety requirements and certifications and homologations that encourage us to have like an extremely high safety bar. So those certifications, those legal requirements, everything is what are the constraints we play with, plus hardware, plus software, when we build experiences. So it's tricky, but the good thing is that we ensure that the final product that we deliver is always the safest. But yeah, basically that. And I didn't want to go very into the details, not to start like
going into
a muddy area.
Exactly. I don't want to get into trouble. And so as much as you can share, so obviously. And also, you mentioned that basically you have more flexibility when designing the digital experience within the car, like basically in-house software, right? Versus like Apple or iOS, like Apple CarPlay and Android Play, CarPlay. So does it mean that technically your team and the products that you launched, you're competing with similar offerings from Apple and Android?
I mean, there's many articles right now in the internet where you can read about this. Basically, imagine that three brands use Google. Okay, so in the end, they are like starting from the same baseline and then customizing. But customization is not going to be a big customization, because then it's not going to look very Google, for example, right? And Google will want to things look very Google, so he show up in your car, right? So if some brands do Google, some brands do iOS, then if you suddenly come up with something that is yours, you have more probabilities to do something different, to learn from what they are not doing, to use all the expertise from the car industry. That's kind of the main point that they don't have, even they are learning pretty fast, but basically Google, iOS, other companies haven't been there forever in the car industry. So they still need to learn a lot. So I think that if car companies develop their own software, that will be a huge opportunity for them to differentiate, to add more value, to prepare a better business case. So there are like many other things. However, car industries don't have the expertise building things that probably Google and iOS have. So probably it will take longer. It will have a lot of problems at the beginning. So there are downsides everywhere. So if you want to move fast, use what already exists and build on top of that, collaborating with these other companies. If you want to move in the other direction and be more unique, you will also need to take some risk and probably spend more money and probably commit some mistakes in the middle. So it's just it's top decision.
It's a trade-off. Yeah, exactly. So speaking of cars, because you're like the insider in this industry, when are we getting autonomous cars? Like fully autonomous?
I am just reading a book about that. I am going to just make this number. 10 years, 20 years.
Really?
I guess that we are not that close. Real goal, it's not like driving a plane with autopilot or with, right? Because in the sky, you don't have roads. You don't have like deers crossing the, you don't have like one guy in front of you just throwing a bottle through the window. The real world is so complex. And we can't avoid those that complexity at all, right? That build a machine, a robot, that basically can drive with autonomy like 100%, I think that we are still far from them. We are doing baby steps.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And what's really... So besides the direction of going the more autonomous driving, what other maybe potential beneficial impacts AI and all these new advancements can change in how we drive cars? Any insight into that?
Safety, right? If in the future cars are able to talk between each other, there will be less probability for them to crash. Time saving. That's one of the main things, right? Is you can use that commuting time to do other things. You can probably use your car can give you money while you are not using it. So you just park it and the car can be like doing something in the night for you. So you get money back.
You mean like a kind of Uber kind of concept?
Kind of, something like that. I think that Tesla was like talking about that in the past. Like the car can give you money while you don't use it. So that's like a nice concept. But I think that, there are like a lot of benefits for people like me that I love to drive. I think that driving experience will become boring, but it's just my personal opinion.
Yeah, I've heard an interesting comparison to driving yourself in future will be like riding horses today. It's like really for enthusiasts who really enjoy this moment of riding or driving. So speaking of cars and driving, enjoying the driving experience and controlling the car when you drive, right? Do you have like a favorite car, like a model that really brings you most joy when driving?
Oh, I used to have an Audi A3 hatchback Outback, 2 liters turbo. That was amazing. The sound of the engine, when you were like kind of switching to a lower gear, the feeling of being kind of like pushed back into the seat. Even my wife loved to drive that car. So I think that that's one of my Best memories. But if I have to pick a car, probably Porsche and 911. That's kind of my go-to car, is the one that I want to have when in the future, even if it is from 2020 or 2022, that those ones are cheaper. So yeah, probably a Porsche.
Does Volvo cars have any I guess competitor to this, or like any maybe plans to release something like this?
I mean, they have good things, right? They have like really good engine, that was the 2.5 turbo that the Ford ST used to have. That's a really good engine. So they have good engines, and they had like good engines in the past. And the thing is that now they are moving in a different direction. That's their goal. That's their mission. They are committed with the world, and to make the world like a better place to live. And that's why they are like switching to full electric cars. If from my point of view, that there are like good things and bad things on doing that, right? But it's just a personal opinion.
Oh yeah, it's all about what a person cares about and enjoys doing. Yeah, so it's, there's no kind of right or wrong here. Interesting. Okay, so let's go back to the UX world, to the UX topics. So you joined Volvo Cars as a designer, right? As mm-hmm. a lead designer, and then you're a UX manager there, right?
Mm-hmm.
So maybe you could share some advice for people who are, first of all, considering going the management route, right? Because not every person should or wants. Maybe how did you do it? Like, what exactly are the steps to transition from an individual contributor to a management position?
Good question. It was like a very long-term decision. So it's something that I was considering for a long time since I was working at Amazon at Madrid, and then I moved to US, and then it's when I start like considering about, okay, what is my next step, right? Should I be an IC, or should I move to the managerial position, right? Then one day we did this strength finder kind of thing to know your strengths, and everything in my report was about you can find like potential in other people, you can help develop other people, blah blah. And it was like, okay, so looks like I am done to move in this direction, right? So I was more aware of those strengths, and then I was working to develop those. I was preparing myself at Amazon to be a potential manager, getting a mentorship from really good managers at Amazon. Also at Amazon Business, Stephanie Weeks, Konakatsu, and Andreas, Chuck. So I had really good managers around me. And that helped me identify soft skills and hard skills that I could learn from them. So I was doing that at Amazon. And then also like the leadership principles, right? And also learn how to hire people, blah, blah, blah. I was like involved in all the things that will make me like a good manager in the future. So when the opportunity happened at Volvo, I felt ready. It's just something that I just suddenly felt. Right, it's just I think that I can do it, and I think that I can do a good job. So let's do it. Let's apply everything that I learned. And looks that people is not it's happy with me. So looks like I'm not doing a bad job. But I mean, yeah, you should ask the team I work with.
Sounds good. So. And maybe actually let's go a bit deeper on this question. So if you had to, for example, let's imagine I'm an experienced designer, right? And I suspect that I want to explore and potentially go into management, hypothetically. What would you say are the top three skills that I, as a designer, as an individual contributor, can start practicing? and really kind of improving and kind of so I can start building myself and my skill set to become more like a, as a leadership in a leadership role?
Good question. So first of all, you need to help others shine. So that's extremely important. And when you become a manager, it's not about you anymore. It's about your team. It's about the others, right? You completely need to switch your mind on that direction and really understand if you are going to be able to help others grow and probably spend more time on them than on you. So that's very important. You need to be sure that you will do that. If you don't do that, if you are missing your one-on-ones, if you are not giving them the right advice, if you are not helping them when they are blocked, if you are not doing those things because you have work, then maybe you should not be a manager or a leader, probably. But I think that's one thing. So what else? Diplomacy. You need to be super, use diplomacy like very, very often with the stakeholders, when dealing into problems between people in the team, when dealing into problems between team members and stakeholders. You will face many different problems at personal level, at work level. So you need to be prepared to deal with all type of situations. And finally, empathy. I would say empathy. Today I was talking with one of my peers on that, right? Is this sometimes you get like bad answers from someone, or like someone behaves like pretty aggressive in a meeting. We tend to react to those situations the same way. When you are a senior designer, or when you are a manager, you should have like a completely different behavior. You should continue being calm, and basically understand that maybe that person is just having a bad day, that is not with you, that is not because your work is not good. So you should start like feeling depressed because that person is behaving that way and just thinking that your work is not good enough. So it's just saying, thinking in a completely different way, and so empathy for that person, and probably connect with that person after the meeting and tell them, "Hey, I felt that. Do you have any problem with me? Can we? I don't know. It's just show empathy. Try to understand. Show that you have also vulnerable. I don't know how to say that. Vulnerable.
Vulnerable, yeah.
That one. And when you show to the other people that you are also that way, that you are also a person, they normally feel more comfortable and open and talk with you. So next time, they will think twice before behaving the same way, right? So when you show empathy for others and you show that you care and that thing is important for you, normally you get the same thing back. So that's important. And it's not only for the manager, but also managers should teach that to or encourage the team members to think that way.
Yeah, and that is actually was my thinking as well. So the first one definitely, I guess, makes sense for like transitioning from a contributor to a manager. That you kind of you should switch your focus from being on yourself as an individual to like more like team, and like you are representing a team and you helping remove the roadblocks from the team and help them grow, right? So that's a really good one. But the second and the third one, they're almost like universal, I would say, like being just a good human and a good team member, and really working with other people. So it's kind of more like social skills. So I think those are. I say like it wouldn't hurt to also practice this and improve these skills, even if you are not a manager. Like if you're just kind of working with other people, I think it's general advice. Really good.
But I agree with that, but it's the same thing with soft skills, right? Soft skills are like universal, right? However, soft skills are harder to develop. Hard skills, you can learn them, you can apply them. Soft skills is something more related with the person. So those things, if you are not born with those things and you want to improve in those areas, normally like take more time. So here is the same thing. If your personality is that you tend to argue, you tend to do these other things, then it will normally take more time, effort, and awareness in order to improve that. And that's the part that I think that as a manager, you should do that. Look inside of you and understand very well how you should behave. How can you evangelize your team, like behaving the same way and blah. And not all managers are aware of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, let's go back to your role as a hiring manager, right? And all the previous experiences when you were on the interviewing side of an interview process, right? Even within Amazon, I'm sure you were interviewing candidates even before that. So it's really not specifically. It doesn't mean that you need to limit your insights to just being an official manager, but just kind of from the hiring side of the question. So let's talk about like resumes and interviewing in general and like portfolios, like talking about the UX designers, right? The UX design world. Maybe you can recall what kind of candidates stand out. And thinking from the framing that I wanted to use here is like lots of people got laid off recently, right? And these people are usually from the tech world. They already have experience. So it's almost like the high caliber talent got into the market again. And this makes job finding and job searching for entry-level and intermediate folks harder because there's just like more competition with like probably even more experienced folks, right? So thinking from that point of view, like what really maybe advice and red flags or recommendations you would give to a person, to a designer who is looking for a job?
I'm gonna give a lot of hope to junior and entry level designers. I've seen better presentations from junior designers, presentations, portfolios from juniors than some of the senior designers I've been interviewing. So don't be afraid of being a junior. You can still do like a great job with the presentation, even if your case studies or whatever are more like kind of from the school. Normally, maybe this is me, right? But I care more about the soft skills, right? The rest of the stuff, how to fix a problem and all those things, is something that can be learned later. Is more about how you face the problem, how you interact with the stakeholders, how you do all those things. So if you spend time explaining all those things that not all the people care about, adding details, highlighting the work that you did, how you did it, opportunities that you were exploring but never happened because this and that. Those are like valuable pieces of information that I am always looking for. And a lot of people don't pay attention. I mean, not pay attention, don't include in their portfolio. So you can always prepare like a short version and then have the extended version with a lot of information and things like that. So that's something that you can try, at least. I don't know if I answered the question, but.
Yeah. I think, first of all, it sounds very encouraging. Okay. Second of all, you said that it's just you. So kind of it's kind of your opinion and your particular expectations, but I've heard this and yes, we're kind of, that's the reason why I'm asking you, like, as just kind of sharing your perspective, but I've heard this actually from quite a few folks from the hiring side that it's easier to teach hard skills than soft skills, and especially when somebody is more junior, it's probably even easier for them to be open to learning hard skills. So it's almost like it's easier, I don't want to say to mold them, but kind of they're more adaptable to learning new things than like maybe an experienced person who is really confident in themselves, and they kind of they think that they know everything, which I've seen these folks as well. And I'm not saying that they should be behaving like this, but it's just kind of natural tendency that more junior and less experienced people, they're just always all ears, all eyes. They're kind of, they want to, they're hungry to learn, right? So, which is good kind of to maybe to be better team player and to really be more proactive and show more initiative. So it's not just you that that's my point. Thinking about like, so this is like from the communication style and showing how like during the interview process, showing how they work with others, like kind of as a signal of their social skills, soft skills.
My tip there will be just take leadership principle from Amazon and just try to look into your work. How are you achieving those leadership principles, and include that information in your portfolio presentation. I think that's a good starting point, because I think that leadership principle from Amazon like cover basically everything that is needed for someone to work in a company.
And do you think that leadership principles can be also applied outside of Amazon? So for example, if somebody applies to Volvo cars, could they still use the same? Because I see at least easily half of the leadership principles, they're like really universal truths of being a user-centered designer, a user-centered kind of really thinking about users, right? So because like lots of focus is on customers and bias for action and like invent and simplify. So there are like many almost like obvious things for UX designer.
But also for life. I am also applying those principles for life. So I think that apply like very in a smart way, those principles can help you everywhere.
I agree. It's just like being good human and being empathetic and not just thinking about yourself. I think that's a good point. And not bias for action, right? Like you can use it against procrastination and overthinking problems. And I think it's there are many smart things there for sure. Thinking about job search itself, right? So imagine that there's just like so many people in the market and fewer positions, because many companies have frozen hiring. So if it were you and you were just starting out, how would you really approach getting invited to an interview, like really kind of getting hired, or like at least getting into this first step of the interviewing process?
So I was born in 1983. So what means that when I get out of school and was seeking work, I was in the middle of the crisis, the 2008 crisis. So I've been going through similar situations in the past, and I know how difficult this situation will look like, how overwhelming sometimes the fear of not finding the fear to be refused, this syndrome. What is the syndrome?
Imposter syndrome?
Yeah, that one. Yeah. The imposter syndrome. All these things.
I still have it though. It doesn't go away.
All these things will come to you, right? I can tell you what I did and what I will suggest, or if I am in the same situation, what I will do is basically I will try to go through as many interview processes as possible, even if it is not a good fit, or I think that the salary won't be good, or maybe I am over, I don't have enough expertise for this. So basically that's for you to help you as a training process. Then if you are selected, then is when you need to think, okay, do I really want this or not, right? And don't take whatever opportunity show up to you. Be very wise and think a lot, okay, is this opportunity going to take me in the direction where I want to be, what I can learn from this place, and all those questions. But basically apply to everything. And if you are applying to everything and nothing is happening, look a step back, think about the plan, what skills I'm missing, where can I improve, where I can get a mentor that can help me with the hiring process, with my portfolio, try to identify what is not working, ask for feedback to the interviewers. So you can try many things. So basically you keep refining. It's just kind of the fail fast thing. It's just try a lot till you have like a very refined process to face hiring processes, till you know all the details about your work, till you know to the depth how the interviewer is going to behave, which questions that person is going to ask you. So you feel so comfortable improvising. You feel so comfortable talking about your theme that you are not going to miss any detail that is important. So that's why I think that going through many, many hiring processes will give you that confidence so you can overcome whatever situation. And then don't feel devastated if people say to you no. So I can say you that I randomly apply for things, right? Just to, again, train myself sometimes and see if I am a bit rusty or not, or if I am missing some skills. And I've been declined in many, even in the first like stages of the process, and that's okay, right? That makes me think, and then I think, okay, was because they were like looking for something different? Was because I did something wrong? What is missing in my portfolio now that I am like more senior? Which areas do I need to improve? What I did wrong? And that's something that you will need to do probably your entire life if you don't want to become stagnated. So even if you have a work, just a sport, try to do interviews, right? And if for whatever reason an amazing opportunity show up, just think, okay, it makes sense to switch, and then you can switch. But yeah.
Yeah, I've heard about this advice many, many times, that it's almost like it's you should not stop interviewing even if you're happy at your job, right? Even if you just kind of got a job. And like it's almost like it should be an ongoing activity, because first of all, it helps you, as you're saying, like to iterate your approach, your maybe presentation, communication, really identify those gaps, like where maybe you don't have enough evidence to kind of to prove a point or to show some to illustrate some of the skills. So it's really, I think it's a really good advice. Speaking of like getting feedback, right? So like imagine that you get rejected and like basically you didn't get a job, regardless of what stage this is. Lots of companies, actually very, very few companies are open to provide feedback to the candidate, at least meaningful feedback to the candidate, besides that, like, we're just kind of not a good fit, hope to see you in future, or hope you apply to a future position. How do you know what to iterate if you don't get this feedback? And that's kind of first part of the question. And the second part of the question, does your current company where you work at, what's the position on really sharing this feedback, especially you as a hiring manager, right? Would you be open to telling the candidate how they can improve and why it didn't work out?
Could you repeat the first question? I have extremely bad memory.
okay, let me recall. So the first question, how would you go about getting this feedback without getting this feedback? So how would you know what to iterate on? Yeah.
Got it. Good question. I mean, something that we need to deal with is ambiguity, right? Sometimes we move in this scenario where it's not completely clear if this is the is this direction, is this that other one. So we need to start like developing that. How to call it? This is that mechanism to basically follow your gut feelings. And moving one direction or the other, while always having like a plan B. Basically, try to have always a plan B. We used to talk about two-way door decisions, for example, at Amazon. So this is kind of the same thing, right? It's just, if you are not completely sure, focus on one thing, but keep always like a plan B kind of ready to switch, to easily switch to that. So when it comes about feedback and you basically went through an interview process, you were rejected, you were not able to gather feedback, but you think that you made like a big mistake probably, or something that was critical and that was making you not a proper candidate for that position. So maybe it's just about thinking loud, going through the different steps that you do, the preparation of the portfolio, everything, and try to identify like probably critical points and work on those points. So basically, instead of getting direct feedback and working in one point, probably you will need to work in 3 or 4 possible points where you may make mistakes. So basically, that's my kind of thinking around that. And here at Volvo, I always tell people that they can reach out to me, and I am happy to provide feedback. That feedback probably will be very, I don't want to say generic, but basically it will be tuned, right, a bit. Again, because I am looking for very specific things, so sometimes, because I exactly know what the team needs, and I can sometimes say that, it's just basically I was looking for this and that, and probably these things were missing, or at least I was not able to perceive that information with the work that you were doing. Or sometimes I can just give tips. I think that you could do like a better work in these areas. I think that that will help you. And probably those same candidates can try next year, and we can go through again through the same hiring process. So it's not like my nose forever. It's just that right now is not the right time.
Got it. Okay. On your LinkedIn, in one of your, I guess in one of the parts of your profile, you say that you can ask me about how to present to senior leadership as one of the topics that because you're also an active mentor, right? So you're kind of involved in many organizations and trying to contribute to and give back to the UX community this way. So which is super noble. I appreciate that. So maybe let's take this particular question, because this, I think this can be applicable to any level of designer, right? Because in different organizations, presentations can happen to like across all the levels, right? Even if you're just starting out and intermediate, you still may have a chance to present to senior leadership. So maybe let's use that question and share maybe advice from your experience. What a designer need to keep in mind when presenting to senior leadership?
I am refreshing my mind, because it was a presentation that I was doing at Amazon to again help junior designers or entry designers to understand how to present to Amazon leaders. I have to say that Amazon leaders are slightly different to leaders outside Amazon. So they take this as information, but probably maybe your leaders look something different. So just check that before. But basically there was like a first part where you were preparation of the presentation about the documentation that you have, that you know your stuff. You have checked all the questions that you can eventually get from leaders. You have an appendix full of things in case something happens. There were things about preparing the environment, right? Just check that everything worked, the presentation works, there are no typos, the projector works, the internet connection, you have a plan B, something not work. So environment was another big thing. Imagine being in a room and suddenly the projector is not working, and then the meeting is done. And leaders normally don't have a lot of time, so the time is like gold. So you need to be really, really wise and really smart with the time that you have available with them. So that was the preparation. Then it's about the content, right? It's just provide context. You need to keep in mind that these leaders are jumping from meeting to meeting. Probably they have been like checking 20 projects before your project. So that means that you need to give them enough context. Don't jump into the details without giving context. Once you do that, context, solution, be ready to provide, to get feedback from different areas, note that feedback, try to have a note taker so that note taker can take notes while you present. What else? And then there were more things about the feedback, right? Feedback is a gift. Don't try to disagree in the meeting with feedback coming from leadership. Just take it, digest it, and then probably arrange a follow-up meeting if you disagree, if you have different proposals, if you think that there is something that could have been done better. So I think that those are like the main things that I will tell people to do is just prepare your team, know your stuff, all the details, be ready to get like probably a lot of feedback, even feedback that you don't like, and do the best you can with that feedback. Another thing is if you sometimes feel that you don't know all the stuff, because probably it's not your area of expertise, feel free to bring the right people to the room. Just if it, maybe it's a PM, maybe it's a dev, a developer, maybe it's someone else, just bring that person to the room and give them some kind of guidance so you can rely on them if some tricky questions come in your direction. So you can send the question and continue with the meeting. And also you need to be very strong keeping the presentation ongoing. It's very easy to derail the meeting with questions from people. So you need to be very strong. And you can use tricks like, oh, nice comment, thank you for that, I will take that note and we can check that later. Or let's have that conversation in a different meeting. Or we just have 5 minutes to talk about this topic, so let's table that other one. So the experience and doing like a lot of our presentations will give you the expertise to basically stop topics that derail the main meeting, the main topic of the meeting, so you can focus and get agreements and fulfill the goals of the meeting.
Yeah, that's a very like a big list of actionable tips and advice. Really cool. But I can also recognize a lot of this advice from like Amazon culture and like Amazon kind of presentations, right? But I think it also like if you can use this as like almost like a universal framework for presenting to even outside of Amazon. I think it's still a very robust framework to follow, and like take care, like at least minimize the risks of not having answers ready or kind of some kind of more preparation issues like with the technology and the room and note taking. So I think this is like universal advice, regardless if it's Amazon or not. I think what was initially good to really point is that depending on some companies, because Amazon is very, I would say, data-driven, like probably more than average, like for, at least from my experience, from my observations, or at least they try to. So there's like way more focus on data, right? So like, and maybe like in some other companies, you can, I don't want to say bullshit through your way, but kind of get away with not enough, or at least kind of some gaps in data, or like no data, or like minimal data. When like Amazon, like they will be pushing back and kind of forcing you to kind of get this data, run these experiments to kind of mine data and so on, so kind of to make the right decision. So yeah, I think it's a good point also to keep in mind. It's like a disclaimer. So this is more data-driven company, Amazon kind of expectations. But lots of things are really, I think, solid. And you should, even if your organization, if you're outside of Amazon, doesn't care that much about the data and like really bringing like numbers and getting like all this analytics. I think it's still a good framing for yourself when you prepare your presentations to do your best to get as much data as possible and then go with that. Good points. Okay, so I have actually one question in regards to your current role. And this may be like maybe specific to Volvo Cars, maybe specific to your particular position. What's really the biggest problem, the biggest challenge that you are facing today in your job?
I think that there are like three different type of challenges at personal level, organization level, and cultural. But I think that the biggest one is the cultural one, right? So I am Spanish, I've been working in US, and then I came to Sweden. So the cultural change was very big. And I think that here what I see is that, how to explain it, but basically there is more risk averse. So it's more difficult to take decisions. It's more difficult to get things approved. It's more difficult to get momentum. And all these things is because they don't want to take a lot of risk. Most of the times things need to be agreed by many people. And if you want to move fast and you need to agree with many people, that normally doesn't work. So I think that that's one of the biggest challenges is how can we change things that have been happening in one specific way at the company so we can move faster, get more things done, get better agreements, and in the end, like meet deadlines. So I think that those are kind of the key things. And we are moving in that direction. We are like making a lot of improvements.
And you're talking about Sweden, Volvo Cars, or European work culture in general?
I think that North Europe. I think that is not only about Sweden, but I've been hearing something about Czech Republic. So I think that it's more about countries in the north of Europe, how they normally take decisions and the decision process. Normally require like a lot of stakeholders, different approval levels. So those are like the things that, you know, at Amazon, it was like fail fast, let's build something very basic, test it, improve it later, take some risk, measurable risk, right? That's why we were like taking two-way door decisions instead of one-way door decisions. By the way, one-way door decision is a decision that if you revert, it will create pain to the customer, right? So I think that that's the biggest challenge is how can we change that mentality so we can move faster. I think that if this were a software company, it will be easier, right? Because basically you can develop something, test it, and that's it. But when you have a car and normally you need to build a car like 3 years in advance, that becomes even a bigger challenge. So move fast when the car will be launched in 3 years. And there are all these things that need to happen in parallel, right? Car is like a very complex product. So then it becomes even trickier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. So does it mean that when you were working in Spain, like the culture was different from Northern Europe?
I mean, we are, I don't know, it's just different. How we face problems, how we address like tough situations. I think that is different in the south of Europe than in the north of Europe. Maybe I would have problems after that, but I'm just personal opinion. That's
yeah, it's,
my,
it's
my
your
way,
personal
my,
observations.
My way
of thinking. Yeah.
I normally think that diverse teams are better because they get influenced for different cultures. And that's the beautifulness of it, right? It's just you can bring good things to other cultures, and other cultures can also influence you. I also think that the way to deal with some work-life balance in Sweden is better than in Spain, for example. So, but if we talk about work, yeah, I think that getting agreements, get things approved, and all those things is something that definitely, at least for me, create a lot of pain because I like to move faster, and it's difficult because the way things work here, and that's it.
Yeah, and I think probably like in your particular experience, in your particular case, your experience working in the States, in the USA, also adds to this contrast, right? Because like that culture, like the American culture, is almost like the opposite of like conservative and like slow. It's like really breaking things, and especially like big tech is more, yeah, it's like the other side of the spectrum of the pace and the risks, risk taking as well. Yeah, I think the so for you, it's like the contrast is even higher than for maybe like people who've never been there. Interesting. Okay, so one more question on more, maybe like your passions, I guess. If money wasn't a question, what would you do?
Yeah, this is the toughest one. I don't know. Probably I will retire to spend some time thinking what I want to do next. And I think that family, right? If I had enough money, I will focus on money or to do, this sounds like very polite, but basically do good things for other people. Or try to make this world a bit better. Those things. Or just spend time with an old car, trying to repair it and making it work. A bit of everything, but nothing fancy, really. What I discovered after those years working, after top situation happening at personal, at working level, is that work is work. And you need to realize that there are other things that are more important, that is just you and your family. I will say that, I spend more time with family. If money is not a thing, I will spend more time with family.
Interesting. Okay. Sounds good. And last question, if people want to reach out and maybe get more advice from you or just follow you online, how can they reach out?
I mean, if I said things are interested to you, you want to dive a bit deeper, you want to have some advice, LinkedIn normally works for me. I used to be in some websites where people were reaching out to me, but due to the amount of time available that I have now, I am paying more attention to LinkedIn. So LinkedIn is the right way.
Okay, sounds good. Awesome. Okay, thanks, Fernando. This was a very interesting and I guess very diverse set of questions and advice. So I really appreciate you sharing your story and your takeaways from your career. It was super valuable. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for giving me the opportunity. First time that I do this. So
oh, really?
Hopefully really? It was okay.
Yeah, you're a natural. Probably like all this training on the social skills have been paying off.